Donald Trump has been in office 84 days today and has reversed his position on several key policies within that time span. This week alone has been especially eventful. Yesterday, he reversed his stance on more than half a dozen campaign promises. For example, after speaking positively about Russian President Vladimir Putin on the campaign trail, Trump this week described relations between the two countries as at an all-time low.
It would be wonderful if NATO and our country could get along with Russia. Right now, we're not getting along with Russia at all. We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia. This is built for a long period of time.
Meanwhile, President Trump, after hosting Chinese President Xi Jinping at Mar-a-Lago last week, said he will no longer accuse China of currency manipulation, as he had promised repeatedly during his campaign. This week, the president also changed course on NATO after he previously threatened to dissolve the alliance.
The Secretary General and I had a productive discussion about what more NATO can do in the fight against terrorism. I complained about that a long time ago, and they made a change. And now they do fight terrorism. I said it was obsolete. It's no longer obsolete.
SV Dante joins us now. He's senior White House correspondent with the Huffington Post. SV, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be back.
Well, this has been an eventful week as far as the president's policy moves go. What big changes have we seen in his stances?
What changes haven't we seen in his stances? Probably is easier. It was amazing. He did an interview with Fox Business, which was very interesting, and he talked about the meeting that he had with the Chinese president in Mar-a-Lago and talking about the weapons strikes and the missile strikes. And then he had an interview with the Wall Street Journal in which he kind of went back on half a dozen major policy platforms that he positions that he had during the campaign. As you mentioned, among them, Vladimir Putin, NATO, currency manipulation, whether China was guilty of that or not, interest rates, whether they're too low or too high. In the campaign, of course, he claimed that they'd been artificially kept low for the purpose of helping President Obama all those years. Whether he would keep Janet Yellen, the chair of the Federal Reserve, the Export-Import Bank, and whether that was a good thing or not. In the campaign, he said it was a bad thing and he'd get rid of it. Now he's come around to decide that, no, actually, it's a very good thing and he should keep it. So it's kind of whiplash-inducing, I guess. And will it last? I don't know. I mean, he changed his mind relatively quickly on these things, it seems. Just earlier this month, he had said that he called China like a master manipulator of currency. And then in yesterday's Wall Street Journal interview, they're not manipulating currency. So who knows? Maybe he'll change his mind the other way and go back to his original positions.
Well, the president has said to be successful, you have to be flexible. So is that what we're seeing here? Flexibility, a new president in office who's learning as he goes along?
Well, learning, sure. I think some of that is based on he had these opinions during the campaign without a whole lot of knowledge. If you paid attention to his interviews, when he was asked policy details about the things that he believed, he really didn't have any. He would make these assertions, but was kind of unable to back them up with facts. So maybe now he's actually learning some facts and modifying his positions to match them, I suppose. I guess that's possible. The other possibility is that with the loss of importance of Steve Bannon, we're seeing other people's ideas, like Gary Cohen of formerly of Goldman Sachs, who's his chief economic advisor, Jared Kushner, who's his son-in-law and also a senior White House aide. Maybe those folks are having more of an influence on what the president is thinking now than Steve Bannon used to.
Do you think it represents a turn or a pivot, as some people are calling it, toward maybe more orthodox views than he seemed to hold on the campaign trail?
At least so far, that's absolutely what we're seeing. I mean, not calling China a currency manipulator has been the position of the United States for years, because, in fact, they've moved their currency in the other direction over the past couple of years. Interest rates being too high or too low was the reason that was done. Janet Yellen has been seen as a pretty competent Fed chair. NATO has been seen as important for almost 70 years. So in a way, yeah, he's getting back to what most American politicians have believed for a very long time.
And new presidents, they often struggle with promises that they make on the campaign trail. President Obama was unable to close Guantanamo. George W. Bush struggled with the deficit. Is that what we're seeing with President Bush, or Trump, rather? Is it any different?
It is somewhat different because closing Guantanamo was maybe not the majority view, but it was a view of a sizable number of people in this country, and it was considered policy that there was a downside to keeping it open. Some of Donald Trump's views during the campaign were not really based on evidence of the actual world, it seems. And, for example, some of his views on trade and whether particular trade agreements were good or bad. So maybe now for the first time we're seeing some sort of evidence-based analysis enter into his statements about these things, which is a little bit different from what I think both President George W. Bush and certainly President Obama had done in their time.
Right now, we are talking with S.V. Date, senior White House correspondent at the Huffington Post, looking at President Trump reversing himself on several key positions this week and looking at why some voters may have chosen to go with Donald Trump in the election. Are these position changes, do you think, going to have any reverberations with that group of people who have supported him in the past?
It may. Among those who really do believe that the U.S. needs to get out of world affairs and kind of isolate and just think about ourselves, yeah, it may. But I've got to tell you that a lot of people who supported Donald Trump did so because he promised them they would get their high-paying job back, which they had maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and no one else was making that promise, so what did they have to lose? Now, if he can't do that, and the laws of economics suggest that he can't in many cases, that's, I think, when you'll start to see a lot of that support in the upper Midwest start to disappear on him.
And looking more closely at some of these changes that happened over the past 6 days or so, President Trump reversed, as you said, his much more critical stance on China and said that China was not manipulating currency. Can you talk us through a little bit how that change unfolded? What happened?
Well, if I knew, I would be able to tell you. But it seemed to happen merely by having conversations with Chinese President Xi Jinping. As you know, the Chinese president was at Mar-a-Lago, which is President Trump's resort that he owns in Palm Beach last weekend. And between the time he spent with them there and then a subsequent phone call they had earlier this week for about an hour, I guess, President Trump came around to agree with a lot of the views that President Xi had been explaining, including, for example, Donald Trump had been convinced that if China wanted change in North Korea, it could happen instantly almost. And all that needed to happen to affect the situation in North Korea was to have China on board. Well, now he says, well, you know, it's actually kind of complicated because China and Korea, they have a long history going back many years, thousands of years. And so maybe this isn't so easy after all. So it was obviously those discussions that got him to this new position. I don't know, again, how long that will last. President Trump seems to have a tendency to accept whatever the last person told him was. And at this moment, maybe that's because that was President Xi.
And Sharish, I want to talk about NATO. President Trump, again, previously threatened to dissolve NATO. Maybe he said it wouldn't be such a bad thing if NATO didn't exist, that they weren't fighting terrorism. And now he is behind NATO as of recently. What does a switch like that do in terms of the relationship the United States has with its allies in NATO?
Right. Well, in terms of that, in terms of those relationships, it helps them immensely because I'll tell you, I've spoken to some folks in Germany and in Great Britain, and they were more than a little nervous about having the United States president say things like, maybe if you don't pay up, maybe we can do without NATO, and maybe it's obsolete, maybe it's past its time, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not exactly sure how he gets his mind around this, but basically what he's saying is this. They have acceded to my demands. They have done what I told them that they had to do. And so NATO is now just fine. And those two things that he speaks about are they're going to have their members all contribute 2% of their GDP, and they're going to focus on terrorism. Now, the thing about increasing their support, the financial support, in terms of building up their own militaries now, there's no direct payments from one country to another. That happened in 2014. So that's been in works now for 2.5 years. And in terms of not fighting terrorism, well, the one and only time that NATO has invoked its common defense language has been when they supported the United States following the terrorist attacks on 9/11, 2001. So on both counts, he's factually wrong. But yet he's decided that because he's learned about these things, I guess, they're actually doing those things that he said they should do, and therefore all is good. I mean, the statement yesterday that they used to be obsolete, now they're no longer obsolete, was pretty amazing hearing that.
Well, and just briefly, Sharish, you said that this is something allies in NATO would welcome hearing, but on the other hand, this is also, in a word, it's unpredictable. And does that very unpredictability have a cost, too, even though at this time, in this case, this is something that maybe members of NATO are eager to hear?
Right. They are eager to hear it. They are still nervous that a mind that could be changed so quickly in one direction can possibly change back in the other. On the other hand, this is better than where they were 3 weeks ago, right? So that's a step in the right direction. And perhaps more important, we have a change in the National Security Council now. I mean, whereas Steve Bannon had been a member of that and was run by Mike Flynn, and Mike Flynn was right behind Trump the entire way during the campaign, and maybe that was allowing the president's views on NATO to color his own. Now we have a General H.R. McMaster, who's a career Army officer who is not a supporter of Trump before accepting this job. And so we have a very different type of leadership and staffing at the National Security Council than we did just a few weeks ago. And maybe that's what's behind some of these changes, because now that's a person who is speaking to President Trump daily and maybe is influencing his ideas on what is and is not important.
We're looking at President Trump reversing himself on several key positions this week. Our guest is Asvi Date, senior White House correspondent at The Huffington Post. And we want to hear from you on this. You can call us at 800-642-1234. Do you see this as a necessary course correction, or are you disappointed that the president seems to be backing away from some campaign promises? Our number is 800-642-1234, or you can send us email to ideas@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation about President Trump's recent policy reversals, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of his reversals on questions pertaining to NATO, Russia, Syria, and China? Is this the result of the realities of the presidency setting in, or do you see other forces at work? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Asvi Date stays with us now. He's a senior White House correspondent at The Huffington Post. And let's take our first caller now. We have Jim on the line in Altoona. Jim, hi.
Hey, hi there. Yeah, I want to make a comment. I think the discussion here needs to be broader. We're talking about this solely as a policy reversal. I see it as a bigger issue. And let me say that in order to understand how President Trump makes decisions or thinks or acts, I think it's necessary for anyone who comments seriously to have read his book, The Art of the Deal. In that book, he stresses that in order to negotiate with anybody, you need leverage. And I believe that's what is the case here. So currency manipulation is the leverage, or one of the leverage points, the primary leverage point, being used with China in order to get them to help us deal with North Korea. That's the bigger issue here. So how does he go to the table and get them to do that? I believe that he did that by using currency manipulation as his leverage point. And if you help us with North Korea, I will back off my position that you're a currency manipulator and not pursue an agenda along those lines that would harm China.
Jim, thank you so much for bringing that up. And yeah, there are those who say if you want to understand what's happening with Donald Trump, read Donald Trump. He explains his thinking in books like The Art of the Deal. Is there something to that, Sharish?
Well, I would be, I guess, more ready to accept that if Donald Trump had actually written The Art of the Deal. As we have heard from his ghostwriter, Donald Trump gave some general ideas about what he would like in it, and then Tony Schwartz wrote the book, and then Donald Trump went through the manuscript and either okayed it or not okayed it, and mostly okayed it, and that was that. So in terms of currency manipulation, as a factual matter, the Chinese currency has been moving in the opposite direction from what you would expect under if they were actually manipulating it to enhance their trade for the last 2 years. So there wasn't really much to give them other than say, okay, fine, you're not actually doing this. Now will you help us with North Korea? I don't know if that's necessarily using leverage or bargaining chips. China has an interest in controlling North Korea. I don't think they want the dictator there, Kim Jong-un, to have nuclear weapons. So we have a natural agreement point, big picture, right there. I don't know if currency manipulation or anything to do with trade really has a lot to do with that.
And do you see the kind of twin strands that Jim was getting at there, sort of a business mindset of leverage and deal-making versus maybe diplomacy, maybe tough diplomacy? Do you see them as having things in common or more things that are different about those two approaches?
Well, I'm not really sure what to say about that. I mean, Donald Trump is really his main business for the last, I would say, 20 years since his casinos failed, has been selling his name. He's been branding his name on buildings all over the country and the world, and that's kind of what his business model has been. Prior to that, his casinos failed, his airline failed. He was forced to the brink of bankruptcy, had to give up his yacht, his all kinds of things. So if it is a business mindset, I'm not sure it's one that will be helpful in terms of dealing with other countries, because the deals that he made when he was a self-described genius businessman weren't that great. Now, again, no one can run the presidency by himself. It's much too big a job, and the people who are in his ear the most now are very different from the people who were in his ear during the campaign and in the first month or so of the presidency. And I think that's probably better explains what's going on than some sort of deal-making paradigm.
Well, Jim, thanks a lot for that call. And I want to take a next call here from Saeed in Green Bay. And by the way, you can join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Saeed, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for taking that call. I think the analysis of your guest speaker, very much like the analysis of most people on the left, is really driven by a visceral hate for Trump that interferes with their objectivity. So for me, it resonates very much that we have been very poor negotiators in the last 8 years in the international arena. So for example, we started the Obama administration started their engagement with the Russians by unilaterally withdrawing the deployment of anti-ballistic missiles in Eastern Europe as was planned, without getting anything in return. It is the first time in American history that the United States could not even negotiate the terms of its surrender in Syria. Okay, and so yes, we have lost. Our negotiations with Iran are shameful. Okay, the very
and Saeed, I'm going to jump in. I want to make sure we're running short of time, and I want to make sure our guests can answer. Do you want to respond to Saeed's comments so far, Sharish?
Well, I mean, there are facts, and facts kind of matter. I mean, in terms of Russia, I mean, I think the Obama administration will say, yeah, that didn't work out. I think they're the first ones to say that. On the other hand, they did renew and enhance a nuclear arms treaty. So that happened, and that's still the controlling feature between the two countries in terms of nuclear weapons. In terms of the Iran deal, it's interesting that although the President Trump said he's going to rip it up and do away with it and renegotiate it, his own National Security Council team is saying, you know what, it's working. They are not developing nuclear weapons. They've done what they said they would do in terms of getting rid of their nuclear material and not making more. So for that portion of it, I don't think you're going to see any change to that deal because it's actually doing what it's supposed to do. Now, in terms of their ballistic missile technology, that's another matter, but that wasn't part of the nuclear deal.
And Saeed, thank you for that call. And Sharish, we've got about a little more than 30 seconds here. I want to touch on Donald Trump rumored to be on the verge of firing his chief strategist, Steve Bannon. Do we know what's perhaps behind that change of heart?
Well, I don't know if it's him firing him necessarily, or whether Steve Bannon, if he gets pushed out of serious decision-making loops, is going to say, well, I don't need to be here. I've got other things to do. And maybe it'll be a combination of both. My understanding is that the president was not pleased that Steve Bannon was getting so much credit for the policy initiatives that he did in that first month, for winning the election, for coming up with those speeches and ideas that got him through those final weeks of the campaign. The president likes to think that he's responsible for all his successes, and when other people are given credit, that kind of irks him and rubs him the wrong way. So maybe it's a mishmash of all of these things.
And we leave it there. SV, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was SV Date, senior White House correspondent with the Huffington Post, looking at President Trump's reversals on several key policies this past week.